I'm Frank Vaughn, and it is September 22nd, 2024, and I find myself pondering the nature of existence, the nature of things, and what it all means. In a video I did this week, we discussed these things and talked about God and talked about the Olympics and the two sides of the coin. And there was a lot of certainty expressed in the comments, which is fine. I wouldn't want to detract anybody from their certainties. And there were a lot of questions, and I thought, I'm going to endeavor to answer the ones that I can from my own personal experience and my own relationship with creation, with existence itself. Now, I was reading this morning about the findings of the James Webb Telescope and how some of those findings are classified. And those who attend those classified meetings do not want to talk about the findings. And I find that very peculiar and very interesting. But it also made me think of something in particular, and that is that we can look one way, as far as our technology allows us to look, and we still don't know what underpins it. These are images of atomic particles, of atoms themselves. And this is about the best we can do. And look at them, held together by an incredibly powerful force that we barely can scratch the surface of our understanding of, and eventually maybe we'll see even further. We have an idea what lies beyond this, but that's all we have is an idea. We can't actually see it, and what lies below that? And if we turn our microscopes and our telescopes around, we can look into the sky, and we can see millions and billions of years into the past because we understand how light works. So we have absolutely no concept of what the universe actually looks like today. All of our knowledge about the universe is backdated millions and billions of years. So all of the findings that we see are long gone and completely changed. And as far as science can tell us now, we have no idea how to discern what anything looks like in the universe at this moment. And I think that's incredible. Whether you're looking in or you're looking out, it is boundless and limitless. And the deeper we look, the more boundless it becomes. So the one thing that I know about existence is that it has always existed. There's no beginning and end, for there can't be a beginning and end. For you and I to be having this form of communication, something always has been, always will be, and cannot cease to be. That seems self-evident. It seems completely compatible with reason that you can't have something from nothing and you can't return something to nothing. It will just transmit, it will just transform, and it will just change. So the concept of a beginning and an end is a human construct, limited to our own minds, shaped by our own reality. We are born and we die, and we don't know what happens before, and we don't know what happens after. And so we can only conceive, in a very limited way, reality through that lens. But you can know without fully understanding that those things are not real. There is no beginning and end to existence. And I think I can find support for that in the biblical literature and in many other literatures that I've read. There's a number of legacies in the world. Now, before I do that, I just want to talk about certainty. And I said in the previous video that I don't want to take anybody's certainty away. And I don't. But I'm just going to highlight some realities right now to try and explain my own lack of certainty and why I try to keep these things private. Looking at Christianity, this is just a list that I've compiled in advance of this video. I've been thinking about this all morning. We have so many different versions of Christianity. We have the Eastern Orthodox Church, which in itself has the Russian, Greek, Serbian, Bulgarian, and Romanian Orthodox churches. Then you have the Oriental Orthodox Church. I just was reading my Ethiopian Bible last night. I have not delved into that too deeply. I'm probably going to. We have the Coptic Orthodox Church. We have the Ethiopian Orthodox Church. We have the Syriac. We have the Armenian. And that's just Eastern. Then we have Western Christianity with Lutheranism, Calvinism, Reformed tradition, Anglicanism. Anglicanism, which was the product of a king's desire to get divorced, which the Pope wouldn't grant, so he just created a church, and millions of people follow that church to this day. Baptists, Methodists, Pentecostalism, Evangelism, Adventism, Restorationism, Anabaptists, Quakers. And then we have the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Mormons, Oneness, Pentecostalism, Unitarianism, and Universalism, and then you have the older ones. Ones that are not so relevant today, Gnosticism, Politians, Bogomils, Hutterites, Mennonites. Those are relevant today. I mean, there's the point I'm trying to make. Hutterites. There's so many different variations on the same theme, and that's just Christianity. If we look at Islam, we have the obvious Sunni, Shia divide. But you have Hanafi, Maliki, Shafi'i, Hanbali, Sufis. You have ancient forms. You have movements, Salafis. I mean, it goes on and on. And if you think that, I used to be tempted into thinking that Judaism itself was sort of one of the only unitary belief systems. But again, when you dig, you discover that you have Reformed Judaism, Reconstructionist Judaism, Humanist Judaism, Renewal Judaism, Cultural Secular Judaism. You have historical Karaites and Sadducees and Pharisees and Essenes and Sephardic Jews and Mizrael. And it goes on and on and on, regardless of what sect. And we can do this for Buddhists. We can do this. Hinduism is just a collection of different versions of worship. But the thing everybody has in common is certainty. If you are a believer and you believe in the way that you believe, you are more often than not absolutely certain, especially the most faithful adherents, are absolutely certain that their method of worship is the one and the only one. Now, I can't do that. I can't arrive at that certainty. But I do have my own certainties, and they help me navigate life. So why would I want to engage in a debate or a conversation about the nature of existence that might undermine your certainty? My certainty is very particular. It's experiential. It is informed from a plethora of different places and experiences. And it is mine. And to a degree, my fear, from my experience with the Jehovah's Witnesses, which I highlighted in my last video, my fear, I do not want to be compelling on the subject. And I have no desire to take anyone's arrival at certainty away. Now, as far as existence goes, I'm going to read a bit of Ecclesiastes because I think we like to throw around biblical verse and religious verse ad nauseum, but you always see the same sorts of things coming up. But I find Ecclesiastes is just, it's so overlooked. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king of Jerusalem, vanity of vanities, saith the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all this vanity. What profit hath a man all his labor which he takes under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth is forever. The sun rises, the sun sets, and hasteth to its place where it arose. I'm not going to read it in the ye olde English. The wind goes toward the south and turns around and comes to the north, and it whirls continually, and the wind returns again according to the circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun. Existence has always existed. Skipping ahead to chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes. To everything there is a season, a time, to every purpose under the heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stone together, a time to embrace, a time to refrain from embracing, a time to get, a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to cast away, a time to rend, a time to sow, a time to keep silence, a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time of war, and a time of peace. What profit hath he that worketh in what in that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of man to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time, and also hath he set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from beginning to end. And right there is my first fundamental disagreement. It's only in the last bit. Everything else made sense up to that point. For there is no beginning and end. Chapter 3 contradicts Chapter 1's assertion that there is nothing new under the sun. And how can it do that but by the hand of man that was allowed to pen the words? It doesn't mean there's not wisdom there. It doesn't mean there's not great truth. It doesn't even, nothing is invalidated by the presence of these words. But it is very clear that it is not even a cycle. It is one unbroken moment in eternity, with no beginning and no end. So against that, and compared to the fact that you can look up as far as you want to look and never actually see anything, and you can look down in minute detail and never actually know, that you can have knowledge that the very thing that you are sitting here right now looking at this, in a sense, isn't even there. I don't know about you, but I can't be certain about the fundamental nature of any of that, any more than I could be certain that one method of worship versus another method of worship equals salvation or death. Because the members of even just the Eastern and Western religious traditions have such fundamentally different methods of worship and belief that one would exclude the other. I'm just a man. I am not in a position to do that. I cannot say confidently that you're going to hell because you're a Jew. I cannot say confidently that you're condemned to eternal deathly fire because you're a Mormon or a Jehovah's Witness. I can't do that. I also can't say that a person who believes these things is irredeemable, because I've met good people from many different faiths. I can't believe that a noble, just, and good God would condemn them for the individuality of their belief systems if the end product is good. Likewise, I shouldn't even get into it. I don't think I'm going to. Because when you open this can of worms, it's a really deep hole. The thing, and I'll wrap it up before I get mumbling too much. In my own life, in my own studies, in my own experience, in my own practices, I see the hand of something greater at work that somehow combines free will and a bit of predestination together. I see a two-way relationship, communicative. There are too many beautiful, sweet coincidences in life, even in the midst of tragedy. I read the comment of a man on the last video about this subject, where he said he was boarding a plane, and not the wind, but something pushed him off that wing. And he got on the plane anyway, and he's never walked since, because the plane crashed, I'm assuming. But he says, as he finished the comment with, but I've walked with Jesus ever since a man found his faith when he lost his legs. And that about sums it up. I don't want to take that away from anybody, which is why I seldom discuss these subjects. I'm Frank Vaughn, and I'll see you in the next one.